Cannabis Business Minds, we train and mentor professionals, entrepreneurs, and aspiring entrepreneurs on how to confidently find their place in the legal cannabis and hemp industries. Come on and join us at CannabisBusinessMinds.com.
I'm super excited to start a podcast with some license holders. You know, applying for a cannabis license is something that I talk about, but we actually get to talk to three business owners that have two licenses in Illinois about their journey, taking their entrepreneurship journey from nurses all the way to cannabis entrepreneurs. We're going to talk about social equity. We're going to talk about the process that they went through as social equity applicants and to actually get that license and licenses. And I'm excited just to hear how that story goes.
How's that?
It's perfect. How are you?
I'm good. And yourself?
I'm good. Thanks for waking up so early.
And thank you for having us so early.
I am so excited because Marie and I were just talking on Instagram. And then when you guys apply, like, you know, looking at your guys' background, I'm like, oh my gosh, we have so much to talk about.
Yeah. And it's funny because she sends your podcast over to me and she says, Crystal, you got to hear her. You got to hear Simone. And so, you know, we've been listening to you for a while. And all of the things that you talk about is like so instrumental and educational to us, you know?
Oh, good.
Business. You're the best, Simone.
Oh my God. Well, I literally cannot wait to like really dive in because Illinois is pretty cool. They have a lot of statistics. So I now know some of the stats just about license holders, not a lot of women license holders.
Especially majority owned women businesses, you know, somebody may have a female partner, a group of guys may have a female partner, but you know, they have three women and one man, one man. Yeah.
It's so crazy. It is so crazy. And I'm so happy, Maria. Thank you for reaching out and just connecting with me on social media. And the more that we started to get talking and the more I started to look a little bit about what's happening in Illinois and then learn a little bit more about what you and your business partners are working on, I was like, oh, I have to get these ladies on the podcast. And so I want to first thank you all. You're waking up super early, but it's part of your morning routine, I think. You're all in Chicago in Illinois. And, you know, thank you for joining. And as you kind of get into this podcast, I'd love for you all just to introduce yourself. I know you're all nurses, healthcare practitioners, wellness advocates, turned cannabis entrepreneurs. So, you know, maybe starting with Maria, if you could introduce who you are and what brought you to the cannabis table, and then we'll follow with your business partners.
My name is Maria Davis, of course, and I'm a nurse anesthetist. I've worked in the healthcare industry for a total of about 25 years, including becoming a registered nurse as well. In 2014, Crystal and I, with our background history of being nurse anesthetists and taking care of patients, all type of patient populations throughout the several years, discovered that Illinois was going to go medicinal. And by us having a patient population that was cannabis users as part of their alternative wellness plan, we decided to then implement our plan to go into the cannabis industry. So we both applied, and of course we didn't win a license in 2014. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, we then pursued further and reached out to the cannabis professionals and dug deep into how we could understand the plant even more. And unbeknownst to us, in 2019, Illinois became legal. So that is the path that brought us there. And when Illinois became legal, we talked and with my coworker, Nakia, and with that, we decided we're going to pursue this. Our background is in medical. We are patient advocates. We are patient educators. And no better person to serve this population than us, who've been working with them our entire, pretty much half of our lives. Yeah. So that's how I ended up in the cannabis space here and my background with the medical field.
Wow. And so, Crystal, maybe you could talk us a little bit about you, because that's where, so the story starts in 2014. Was it kind of hush-hush at first? Like, I'm thinking about doing this, or was it?
Well, you know, Maria is the person who's a big dreamer. So when she came to me, I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to do that. But, you know, as I sat back and I, you know, looked at things and, you know, analyzed it, it's like, you know, I'm a nurse and I'm always looking for ways to expand my knowledge and skills. And so, you know, I've been, you know, taught in the nursing field, but we didn't really know much about cannabis, much about marijuana. So, you know, like Maria said, we dove deep into it. And what I did find is that a lot of my patients, you know, in assessing them every day, because like she said, we're nurse anesthetists, so we do ask questions and to see whether or not the things that the patients are using were contraindicated with the drugs that we give. So, you know, I did find that a lot of my patients use cannabis. They say, I smoke marijuana, you know. So, and, you know, what I, you know, they found out that they're just inexperienced users. So in searching for ways to help them to use it properly, like Maria said, we dove into it and we decided, hey, let's just do this, you know. I can give you an example, like, you know, we have patients that are like, you know, who may have COPD, you know, and they say, oh, I don't smoke cigarettes anymore. I smoke marijuana. You know, you just try to teach them that, you know, smoking or, you know, inhaling anything is not good for your lungs. So maybe you should try edibles, you know. So it's like little things like that, like drove me to the point where, you know, I felt like, hey, you know, I can do more for my patients. I can, you know, help them, you know, and as I grow in this learning this industry, you know, I can help them, you know, become, you know, better, take better care of themselves, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that because the nursing profession, I guess it probably varies state by state, right? Of kind of the patients that you're seeing and all that. But I remember even being, my mom got cancer and trying to talk to the nurse about using cannabis in a state that has legalized adult and medical use. And it was like, no. Oh, we don't know about that. And so it was very, very upsetting because patients listen to people in authority and being able to, because you understand the body, you understand exactly how, you know, the body reacts to certain medications and people are going to trust you. So that's really great that you were already having that dialogue about, hey, that they were open to you about, yeah, we're using cannabis. And then now I guess you guys really learning more and more each day since 2014 about the benefits of cannabis for your patients.
Right.
Yeah. So Nikki, how did you get in? So this is 2014. You fit in about 2019?
Yeah. So I too have about 25 years of nursing experience and specifically a nurse anesthetist as well. And so, you know, dealing this space of dosing and titration to effect and understanding chronic illness and dispensing, like all of these words that we hear in the cannabis industry all the time, that's what we do every single day. And that's what that's really our specialty. And so I kind of was watching on the sidelines as Maria and Crystal were doing this and not ready to jump full, you know, head first in, but just kind of paying attention to what they were doing. Maria and I worked closely together. And so she was sharing like some tidbits of what was going on with their application process. But, you know, at the time, I didn't really understand what legalization was going to mean in Illinois. I knew that it was happening around the country, but I didn't really know. I hadn't dug really deeply into what that really would look like in Illinois. And so I continued to educate myself because like they said, you know, the patients had already that were coming to us that had used cannabis had already removed the stigmas. Like they were like, listen, I'm trying to get off of opioids. This is the only thing that's helping my pain. I can't sleep at night. I have PTSD. I have anxiety. They were already coming to us with these stigmas removed. And as an advocate for patients and wanting to better advise them, I had no choice but to dive in and understand the medication or the plant better. I too have a mother that had cancer. She actually passed away from cancer. So I could think of so many applications where this would have been useful for her as she was going through her transition in life. And so 2019, another application round had come about. We had already started talking about some entrepreneurial ideas and found some synergy between the three of us that we could work well together in starting a business. And we liked the fact that we were all nurses and we kind of had this shared vision. And so, you know, I said, we're going to do it again. And so we joined forces and put together a great application. You know, sometimes late nights wanting to pull each other's hair out, but we got it done. and we put together the dispensary application first and then the craft grow for our second application.
Oh my God, so cool. Maria, you know, your partners mentioned you're a visionary. So talk to us about what that vision is for the business and what are you doing? I mean, I know you've got to grow. I know you've got a dispensary, but what is that vision and where are you with kind of realizing that vision?
Well, my vision right now at this point is that we take our company and we provide the best patient advocacy, medication and support system, and also as well as tap into that and dig deep into the legal market. Mm-hmm. We do, because of our medical background and our specific area that we do work in, we do plan on probably developing, something very patient focused. So once the federal realm comes around, we'll be able to take that federally and it'll do well and it'll provide some good supportive FDA approved care to the patients. So that's one of my biggest visions for this. Right now we're growing our facility. We want to build it out. We're reaching out to local politicians and officials and we're getting their support. Illinois hasn't released the licenses for the dispensary, but yeah, because of a lawsuit, but we know where we're going to be located. So we're connecting with people in that area and we're talking to them. We're sharing our plan. We're sharing our vision for what we intend on doing in the area. So right now that's where we are. I think Nakia and Crystal can add to that as well. So,
yeah. So we have been awarded the license to the craft, you know, and at this point, you know, we've acquired the land. We, you know, have like 5 acres and a school that's on it that's it's about 10,000 square feet. So so now we're in a step of like getting it zoned properly by the township so that we'll be able to open up a facility there. And as Maria said, you know, we don't have the dispensary part, but we're also looking for financing for the craft because we plan to retrofit the building for cultivation or the grow part of our license.
Excellent. And then I think this is a very big focal point is that there's this misconception because you guys are showing the story. Like 2014, you apply, you have tenacity, you have resilience, didn't get it, you apply again. 2019, you add another team member. You have been, you know, you've applied, there's success, but you still haven't been able to open your doors. This is common. And I think a lot of people don't realize the long road to regulation and opening your doors. Can you paint the picture, Nakia? You know, could you walk us through like, really, since 2019, you know, that timeline of what, you know, applying, getting a yes, getting that, and the next steps to when you think hopefully you'll be able to open your doors.
Yeah, it's a really arduous process. And there is no really set timeline for this, you know, even though the state puts requirements on you for what their expectations are for when you should open your doors. There was no timeline that would tell us when we would be awarded the license. We applied January 1st, 2020. We waited and waited, and there was, you know, delay after delay after delay. And so when you're trying to start a business, it's really difficult to be able to get moving forward when you don't really know exactly when the licenses are going to be awarded.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we kind of just continue to work towards building our team during that time, figuring out our wraparound services at that time, trying to identify locations. I mean, we put in 17 applications for a dispensary all over the state of Illinois with no idea of where we would land.
Wow.
And so that becomes really hard. Like, how do you plan for that when you don't even know what area you're going to land in? And so we wind up getting our license in Northwest Illinois region. And so as soon as that license is awarded, then we've got to hit the ground running because we have a timeline that we have to make some progress by that the state wants to see that we're moving in the right direction. Same for the craft. You know, we applied. There were several delays in awarding the license. We were awarded the license on August 1st. And then you have a 6-month timeline to show that you're moving in some sort of positive direction. The regulations, the requirements, the fees are steep.
That's okay. So, no, I don't want to interrupt you, but can we talk about that? Because that to me is, you know, and this parlays into social equity and to me, financial equity is if you aren't having positive inflows of cash, meaning you aren't revenue generating or you don't have, you know, an investor at your pocketbook that is willing to give you a ton of money because investors are hesitant because you haven't yet really been able to launch, proven yourself, all that stuff. You know, I've heard that Illinois is one of the best states so far with social equity in terms of, you know, maybe you didn't have to have a real estate requirement. Maybe you didn't have to sink a ton of money in. But can you talk to us about the expectations of the state when it comes to how much money you have to pay? And then we can talk a little bit more about social equity. Like, I mean, are they expecting every applicant to pay these hefty fees for licensing?
Yeah, it kind of goes along with it kind of goes along with being in the business. That's the expectation, right? Like, if you want to be in this business, these are the fees. The social equity program, and I think the state of Illinois was the first to legislate for social equity, did definitely help, especially this round. In 2015, Maria and Crystal applied. You know, they had to have a property, they had to have a location. All of that stuff requires capital up front, and you're using your own personal funds. And so this time around, the license for the dispensary was $2,500. Maria, how much was the license for the craft? Was it also?
I believe it was $2,500 as well,
which was a reduced fee for social equity. That's not the full price. The license for the craft grow is $40,000 once you are awarded the craft grow. I'm sure it'll be similar with the dispensary. All of those fees have to be paid up front. And so you do have to have some personal funds or have, you know, a bank of funds from someplace to be able to pay some of these initial fees. That's the expectation, even for social equity applicants.
Wow. Can you talk a little bit more about what the social equity program in Illinois is helping with and like how, you know, how it differs from other states? I mean, I guess just talk about it and we'll know then how it differs from other states.
Well, one thing that that Illinois did was they had three qualifications or three criteria is how you can qualify for social equity. You could be an owner of a business who had employees who were affected by the war on drugs. Mm-hmm. You could live in a community that was affected by the war on drugs, or you can be a convicted cannabis. You had a convicted cannabis related offense, you know, and those are the qualifications that would help, you know, it would qualify you as social equity. So it had nothing to do with gender or race or anything like that. And Illinois did put forth an effort or has put forth an effort to help because they have they have like an Illinois funding called Cannabis Business Development Fund, where owners, they have like a $250,000 like business startup, you know, they help, you know, start your business up. And I think people who, you can correct me if I'm wrong, ladies, but people who owned dispensaries and cultivations back in 2014, they were the ones who contributed to this fund. Mm-hmm. And then also they have like a community engagement program. It's called 3R program where it's called Restore, Reinvest, and Review, which people provide, or which they provide resources to communities to help people, you know, who have been affected. You know, they want to restore the communities. They want to reinvest back into communities. They want to renew those communities that, you know, have been affected by the war on drugs. And then you have the educational piece that Illinois instituted, which I think is great, that the Department of Agriculture and the community colleges got together. And they said, we'll have 8 locations where we will have education provided to people who want to get into this industry. So we have like city colleges and institutions that are now teaching classes to people who want to get into, like if you want to be a bartender, if you want to be a master brewer, you learn about the plant, you know, things like that. And what's unique about this is that they have 8 locations, but 5 out of the 8 are in areas where they were impacted by the war, you know, impacted by the war on drugs. So they're like I said, they're in the community colleges, they're in a neighborhood, you know, where they're accessible to people can, you know, that people can go and learn this. So yeah, Illinois did set the precedence for social equity and helping people.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds so great. And then if you qualify for social equity, is it a reduced amount of license fees or is it priority for license or what is
it? It is a reduced amount of license fees. So if you qualify for social, if you wasn't social equity, it costs $5,000 for the license. Mm. But if you qualify for social equity, it was $2,500 for the license, for the application fee, you know, and then the $40,000 that Nakia mentioned for the craft or for the license itself. It's also a reduced fee. Now, I don't know how much it is if you weren't social equity, but, you know, the $40,000 to pay for the license itself was a reduced fee.
Okay. It's so fascinating. And then I looked at some of the statistics in Illinois and I was actually shocked about looking at, and I think it's because there's probably a lot of license holders, maybe like you, still in the queue to get to truly get your license for retail or dispensing. But the number of women-owned businesses is so much less than the number of men-owned businesses. And that number even dropped between 2020 and 2021. I could share my screen in a little bit just to show you guys if you like. And then the number of Caucasian businesses versus non-Caucasian businesses, it's like 95% of Caucasian-based businesses versus like not even 5%. That's Asian, Black, and Hispanic. And so I'm curious, when we'll start to see a shift in, if you ladies have any idea of when we're going to start seeing a shift in that, because it, you know, actions speak louder than words. I'm not seeing it in the numbers yet. When will we start seeing it? And maybe I need to talk to the politicians. I don't, maybe not you ladies, but like, why?
Yeah, maybe they know.
Maybe they know a little bit better, but I don't see it. And I was like, before this, we've got work to do. Like, why aren't we seeing what social equity is trying to do?
You know what? Let me just say that one of the things that is lacking, you know, with social equity is access to capital.
Yeah.
So we're not going to see a lot of Black and brown people. Because if you think about it, you're affected by the war on drugs. You live in a community where there's not a lot of income or resource. You know, if you were a convicted felon for drug use, then, you know, you, more than likely, you can't get a job, you know. Yeah. So when you look at those numbers, you know, and you think about social equity, you know, the missing piece is access to capital, right? So
yeah, and that's
more women. When will you see more Black and brown people? That's a good question.
It's the capital. And so have there been any, I guess, incubators or any funds that are truly investing in women of color or truly investing in, you know, minorities or social equity candidates? Like, have you actually seen these funds or people that are doing it? Yes.
Yes, we have. There are several groups out there that are specifically looking for female owned and minority owned business entrepreneurs that they're willing to invest. Now, there are criterias, and I believe that one of the criterias is that you will have to give up your equity, some of your equity at least.
Yeah.
But they're specifically targeting the Black and Brown and the female communities. Have we been approached by one yet? No, we haven't. And that's one of our biggest delays in moving forward is that we haven't had the support. We've reached out to some of these larger companies that we've heard are, you know, supporting these groups. And we've seen several groups. We actually have seen several groups that are benefiting from groups reaching out. So even a group that I've reached out to, they were only looking at this point of investing in people that are in their business in California area. So I don't know if they're just moving from region to region. However, they are out there, far and few between, but they are out there. The access to capital is one of the biggest problems. It's, you know, although you are social equity and you do have a chance in this industry, the one thing that they don't tell you is that you do have to have that funds or access to the funds to move forward in this industry.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the most difficult part of it. Money is not going to fall out the sky.
No. I mean,
you know, we were fortunate enough as in our careers to be able to put aside money so that we can afford to buy our land, purchase the license, the expensive license, you know. So we've moved forward with those particulars, but now it's about retrofitting our land, our growth facility that we did purchase, which is a high price tag. And so, you know, we putting ourselves out there and letting the community, the cannabis community and those investors know that we are here, but yet we haven't yet to hear from them. So that's what's going on.
And I think that's where, you know, telling your story, making sure that you've got that pitch, because when I think about what you ladies have to offer, you have so much to offer, especially because I think about the stacking, right? So you've got your cultivation site, your craft cultivation site, that alone has a story. It's in a school, like an old school. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure security measures wouldn't allow you at one point to do tours, but that would be an awesome, you know, thing to let people kind of see at one point, but security probably not. But then your background is health and wellness. No, your background is in health and medicinal care. And that alone is such a big competitive advantage that so many of these other, you know, dispensaries do not have. And so I think it's telling that story, and you're right, getting in front of the right people who are willing to listen and willing to take the chance, because I don't know that group who was talking about California, but California doesn't seem, unless you're trying to invest in, you know, a distressed asset in a saturated market. I used to be in California. I just interviewed Tony Forge for one of the podcasts that's going to air before this one. California's not doing so well, right? I mean, and so it's interesting. And I think that is, again, maybe to one point of like, these investor relations is something that needs to be part of the playbook.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think, I mean, if anything, it just makes me want to figure out, how can I start a fund? And really,
I wish, because I
don't come from family money. I built everything on my own. And that was the first episode of this season is like, you know, when you don't come from money and, you know, and it's not in your circle, what are you supposed to do? And I think is going to be what I'm going to try to solve on these next few podcasts, because it's unfair. And it's the only way to get financial equity is to really get capital in your hands.
And that's your equity, you know, that we're talking about is that lack of financial equity that's needed to be able to come into this business. And like my partner said, I mean, it's just the social equity program for everything that it did to be able to at least get us the licenses. It's kind of falling short on the wraparound services and the access to capital. And so I would say that would be the biggest area that they really need to figure out and build up an immediate access to capital. There is a loan program that Crystal mentioned, but that loan program is taking, we applied for that loan program during the application process to be pre-approved. It's taking a while to get going. And so when you're on a 6-month timeline to be able to show some good faith progress on your project, you need funds immediately. Like, you know, we need to be able to get going because this process takes a while. The cultivation obviously takes a lot longer to build out than a retail space. Retail space, we could get up and going a lot faster, but we don't have the license because it's being held up right now. So we've got all of these kind of stop and goes that we're trying to deal with as we're trying to attain the capital and meet the deadlines necessary to keep our license.
Yeah. I mean, you've gone through a lot of challenges. And so my question is for each of you, you know, what is that? Why are you so, you know, when people would be like, oh God, I put that money in, but I don't know, right? Like, it's going to be hard. Like, what is that for each of you? You know, Crystal, why don't you start first if you feel like it, but what's that? Why?
So what's the challenge?
Why are you fighting that challenge? Why? Because you have so many challenges getting to where you want to be, but you're doing it. You're waking up. We're talking at 5:45 in the morning right now. What is that push for you to keep on going?
Well, because this is something that I want to do. And I've been, like I said earlier, we've been at this since 2014, you know, and, you know, but even like I think about my background, being a mother, being a nurse, you know, I'm there to help, you know, and in this industry, I feel that I can help too. You know, I can help the patients. And even if you're just not a patient, if you're just a customer who come in the door, you know, I can share my knowledge of health and wellness with you too. So.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very important thing is to share that. Maria, the visionary. What's your why?
Well, my why is, as I said before, my 25 years history in the healthcare industry, I've taken care of just about any and all patient population. So within the 7 to 10 years that we've discovered many of the patients using cannabis, that sparked my intentions or that sparked me to seek out and understand the plant more. And then along with the patients using it, there was information that started coming out and surfacing about the advantages of cannabis on the several disease processes. So looking at the disease processes that my patients suffered and the ability of the plant to be able to be incorporated in a wellness regimen is very important to me. So when I pursued that desire, that was one of the reasons why is this miracle plant, this great plant that's being held from our patients. The patients need to know about this. The patients need an advocate. The patients need a support system and an educator because they need to be able to incorporate this. Not only are they taking this alternative medicine, they take conventional medicine. So they need this education from me, my colleagues, so that we can move forward. So with that said, you know, my why is that we no better person to be able to be in this industry. Of course, I think that this industry has turned the trajectory around and more or less became a business and not the culture of cannabis that it was originally. Mm-hmm. So my why is that I want to move forward. I want to continue to incorporate my health and wellness plan and be there to support the patients and tell these cannabis users or new cannabis users that, hey, this is how this works for you and the reason why. And so keep it health and wellness and run a business as well.
It's the most empowering thing to be able to like run a business and help people. Like the two, like that Venn diagram. It's like the middle spot of happiness. Mm-hmm. Nakia, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I would echo a lot of what my partners have said. Obviously, we have a strong desire to help. That's why we went into the profession of nursing in the first place. And so the education, the advocacy, that's a strong pull for me. Being a Black woman, a business owner, is really important to me. It's challenging, but I've been bitten by the bug and I love the challenge of it all. Every hurdle, you know, we've gone through, we feel a sense of accomplishment when we're able to kind of break that down into digestible pieces and get over that. And so our next hurdle being capital, that's just another hurdle that we're going to have to get over, and we'll climb it. And that's really rewarding to have something of our own. We've worked in the hospital institutions for years. We've worked for other people, obviously, being in the acute care setting. We're ready to do something for ourselves. And I felt this void. Like, I know that as much as I love taking care of my patients and connecting with them, it really brings me a lot of joy. There was something else that I was meant to do. There was another way I was meant to do this. And I'm ready to transition over into the wellness space and come out of the acute care setting. The other big piece for me was, you know, the social justice part of it. When the end point was going to jail for being an expert in this, Black and brown people were the experts. Now that mm-hmm. the endpoint is generational wealth, mm-hmm. We are no longer the experts. We can't even get in the door. Yeah. And so that shift, that turnaround, you know, we have to do our part to turn that around and to help Black and brown people get into this business, help women get into this business. Mm-hmm. You know, we need diversity of thought. We need diversity of ideas in this business. It can't just be one group of people dominating the entire business. So there's so many reasons to, and that's the wonderful thing I think there is about cannabis, is everybody has their own gifts and their own expertise that this industry needs, and they can bring to this industry to really make it what it needs to be. So that would be my big why.
Absolutely. Thank you. Very well said. Are you ladies ready for the speed rounds?
I'm a little scared.
No, it's only one question. It's only one question, because there's three of you. So I'm like, okay, one question, and it's all the same. So it's not so speedy for the last person who goes. But, you know, what has cannabis taught you working in the cannabis industry? What has it taught you about yourself?
I guess I could go first. It's taught me so much. I would say the first thing is challenging myself to be a better version of me, not being afraid of my fears, tackling them head on, you know, thinking outside of the box and thinking more like a business-minded person. I've been kind of stuck in this rut of just being a healthcare provider, which I love and I'm great at, but it's expanded my horizons on how I can be so many more things than just that. It's taught me that I can do, you know, exactly what I put my mind to, that I'm able to accomplish that, and given me the confidence to be able to do that. And so that's addictive to me. I love that feeling, that sense of accomplishment that I feel every single time we move forward. It's taught me to believe in myself and what I'm capable of.
Great answer. Who's the brave soul to go next or to go last? Me. All right, Crystal.
Well, I'll go next.
Oh, Maria, go. Crystal, you got me.
Sorry, did I cut you off, Nakia? I'm sorry. Cannabis has taught me that social norms are not really normal. So it taught me about, you know, questioning what we consider to be normal. It taught me about the cannabis culture and community, and how the people that are involved in this community, it's like one big family. So it taught me a lot about connection and family. It taught me about the difference between using a conventional medication as opposed to an alternative medication can be beneficial to you. So just being in the industry, it taught me about connection. It's just a beautiful industry for me. And I think that the social stigma that had been attached to it so many years was almost like a brainwashing conditioning that it had put upon us when it was totally unnecessary. So it just taught me about the fact that, you know, what we do think is normal may not actually be normal.
A very good perspective. Right. Very good perspective.
So what I've learned in this industry is just to be patient, you know. As an entrepreneur, all of us trying to start this business, get into this new industry, new sector in our lives, you know, I feel like there's a sense of urgency all the time. Like, oh, we got to do this. There's so many deadlines, you know, that we have to meet, or we have to meet this person and do this, or, you know, gather these documents and things like that. So it's always a sense of urgency. And I have been. And this sense of urgency has sort of kind of led me to being impatient. So what this industry has told me is that I need patience. I need more, you know, it's going to happen, you know? So sometimes I have to remind myself, you know, that building a business takes time, you know, yeah. Or just enjoy the process and stop trying to fight against, you know, the process. And that even the fact that the little steady increments or the steady steps, you know, the fact that we put an application in, the fact that we acquired a piece of property, you know, that we could pay for a license, you know, those little steady increments are still progress in this process of us trying to get into this industry. And I think the most important part that I've enjoyed is my partners. You know, I have great partners and they always remind me that, Crystal, we got this and we're going to do this, you know. And I think, you know, just knowing that one day we're going to do this, you know, it's taught me a lot.
Oh, excellent. And I think it's just so important for us always to remember like how far we've come. Yeah, you know, right. You're that very beginning of getting into that space and just all the milestones that you really have, like you've hit a lot of milestones and you really have. And there's, you're right. There's this crazy energy that it's like, you have to go so fast. You have to go so fast, but this is a marathon and I, you know, and it's not a sprint and patience is something I learn every day, but I think it makes the most sense. All of you had lovely insight. So, you know, I think we have to get back on the show, another invite for a few months to see how's it going. I know that you are in the process of, you know, raising capital and all of that. So if people are listening to this story and they're like, you know what, I like their story. I want to work with them. I want to maybe talk to them about an investment opportunity. How can they get a hold of you?
Via email.
All right.
Email. And we have a very simple email.
Okay.
It's cmn@mjrfarms.com. So a CMN, Crystal Maria Nakia.
Simple.
Very simple.
At mjrfarms.com.
Yes, MJ, right. MJ Organics. So MJOfarms.com.
Excellent.
With an S, farms with an S.
Okay. And then what? And you're also on
LinkedIn.
On LinkedIn. Okay, perfect. And I'll put a link in the show notes.
Okay.
Okay. Awesome.
Ramon, we want to thank you so much for inviting us to our very first podcast. We're so excited about that. And we would love to be able to come back and keep you posted on how things are going and what hurdle we've tackled and what milestone we've reached, you know, in the next few months as well.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's show. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this, leave us a 5-star review. Make sure that you share this episode on your social media and tag us in the Instagram stories. You can find us wherever you go on social media. Just look up Cannabis Business Minds. Have an idea for the show or something that you want to talk about? Shoot us an email at podcast@cannabisbusinessminds.com.